This is the Montana Outdoor Podcast, brought to you in part by Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer in Missoula, home of Boss Snowplows, CM Truck Beds, and Diamond C Trailers. Just go to rmtte.com for more information. And by Superior Hardwoods of Montana, home of the largest selection of in-stock high-end wood products and flooring in the western United States. Let them guide you through the woods at superior-hardwoods.com. Now, get ready for more fascinating topics and the most interesting people you will ever find in Montana's great outdoors. We offer new podcasts most every Saturday. You can get a link to these podcasts by going to our website, montanaoutdoor.com, or by going to our Facebook page, or just send an email to downrigger@montanaoutdoor.com and say, "Send a link to my email." It's that simple. Now let's head out with your host, Downrigger Dale, and see what's going on in Montana's great outdoors.
Thank you very much, Manny. And as Manny just said, I am Downrigger Dale with the Montana Outdoor Podcast. And of course, you listen to me every Saturday morning, I hope, all across the great state of Montana and around the world on the Montana Outdoor Radio Show. We just went into our 26th year, and thank you all so very much, and continue to be the most listened to radio show in the state of Montana, which we're very proud of course, and that's thanks to you as well. A few more pieces of business before we get into today's podcast. One, we did a little review of last year. Last year was our first year of doing this podcast. And folks, I can't thank you enough. This has been amazing how much in 1 year this podcast has grown. We are now officially just a little over in that 25 percentile of the most listened to podcasts in America. So, wow. Don't know what to say, but thank you so much. And as we go into the new year, all of our veterans that are listening to us all around the world, we sure love it that you have found this podcast and enjoy doing it. Be sure and email your friends and others around the world. It gives them a little taste of home. So we love that you're here with us. And if you ever have any questions or ideas for new podcasts, well, Manny will be giving you my address, email address here soon. Now, let's talk about something that's near and dear to every, and excuse my voice, little gang, I just got over COVID, so, but it's the weather. The weather is something that us outdoor folks, we rely on for a lot of fun. If it's summertime, we want that nice sunny stuff. If we're out running around, if we're walleye fishing, sometimes we like that nice little, what we call walleye chop on the lake, little breeze going across it, maybe a little slight cloud cover. In the winter, it's a big one for us. If we're out hunting, we got to check it and watch it real close. Ice fishing is huge amongst all of you that listen to this. And of course, we need freezing weather to make the ice. This winter, however, has been a little weird. And some of you are getting a little concerned, getting lots of emails saying, "Hey, could you do a podcast about the weather? Because, man, it seems like we're not even going to have a winter." Now, as I look out the window right now, we got a little snow, but that comes and goes. So I thought I'd check with experts, people that know the weather inside and out. In fact, an agency that we all depend on a great deal, and we're going to learn more about it. In fact, you may not know that so much of your weather information comes from these folks right here with the National Weather Service. I've got Matthew Rosenkranz on with me. Matthew, thanks so much for joining me today. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, good to be here talking about the outdoors.
Yeah. Well, Matthew, first, tell us where you are at right now, and also tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do for the National Weather Service and all that.
Yeah, so I am a meteorologist at the Climate Prediction Center, which is part of the National Weather Service. And we are responsible for forecasts starting 2 weeks in the future, going out to 2 years at most. Most of our focus is on 2 weeks out to the next kind of 3 to 6 months. Wow. So that, and then you know, specifically, I do a lot of hurricane forecasting. And a lot of drought and hydrology forecasting, so water supply and even looking at snowpack in the mountains, which eventually does, you know, that all comes downstream across, you know, across a lot of the country, and a lot of that starts in Montana.
Yeah, and so much of us depend on our snowpack a great deal. because that's what fills our reservoirs, keeps them full throughout the year, brings all that wonderful fresh water into the rivers and everywhere so we can fish and play in the water like so much of us do. And that's obviously when we start out a winter like this in Montana, where, I mean, we have just had hardly any snow. And in fact, it's been pretty mild. We are starting to make some ice around some of the ponds and reservoirs and that. But that gets really, really worrisome for us, especially our state depends so heavily on agriculture and that, and got to water the crops. We got to water the cattle and so on. Matthew, what would you say is the big difference so far, what you've seen in the weather in Montana between, say, last year at this time and now?
So last year, there was a bit more precipitation and more storms kind of just coming across the northern tier of the U.S. So you're coming across Washington and Idaho into Montana and bringing that moisture in. But we haven't seen that. We've seen a couple of storms farther to the south. We've seen one or two into the northwest. For the month of December, most of the state of Montana is actually at 50% or below for amount of normal, like compared to normal. And that's especially prevalent in western Montana in the higher terrain. I've got some spots there. I'm looking at the data. You know, they're 0 to 10% of normal for the month of December. So the data is showing what people are saying and feeling. And then when we take into satellites and radars and combine that all up to do an estimate of snowfall at all, it's all really lining up with that sense of where's winter been.
Okay. Yeah, that's been just such a massive concern of ours as far as, you know, how we see this changing. So let's get into some of the workings of this.
Sure.
What do you see as the long-term winter weather forecast for Montana? And I don't know if you in your office break it down by sections of the state, or if you just look at it as a state of the whole. What are you seeing for our winter weather forecast going forward?
Well, if you want a lot of snow, I'm not seeing a happy winter for you.
Don't say that, Matthew.
But I got to go with where the data and the science go. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the forecast that I'm looking at are for below normal precipitation for January, February, March. It doesn't mean you won't have a storm that comes in and dumps a lot of snow, get you going there pretty good. But when we look at the end of the winter and start transitioning to spring, that April timeframe, when we're looking back, which I know April, there's still plenty of places that snow way after April. Mm. When we're looking at April, we're looking back, we're likely to see below normal snowfall amounts with the lowest relative amounts in the western parts of the state in the higher terrain. And then across Idaho, northern Idaho there, that's where that signal is most concentrated. And that's really related to the ongoing El Nino. Okay. That's a factor in that.
All right. And that's something we hear a lot around when we hear these forecasts and things, and I got several emails, and one in particular kind of struck me. Guy by the name of Ray says, "Hey, Downrigger, what is a La Nina and El Nina, and what the hell are the differences?"
Sounds like some of the questions I got around the Thanksgiving dinner table.
Yeah, so let's go there. What are each of those, and what are the differences? What do they do to our weather patterns?
Yeah, so in general, they're both a changing in the ocean temperatures in the Pacific Ocean. El Nino means the eastern Pacific Ocean gets warmer than normal. La Nina means the western Pacific Ocean gets warmer than normal. And then that changes where all the just millions of little thunderstorms form over the Pacific Ocean. that millions of little thunderstorms ends up changing the entire wind pattern on the planet. And yeah, it's kind of crazy when you look at just where do these millions of little clouds form.
Yeah.
But then them all and add it all up, and it's so big because it's moving the temperatures on about 20% of the planet. And just for a couple of months, it moves it. And then that changes the wind pattern over the Pacific, which then changes the jet stream over the U.S. and where it guides those storms into the western part of the U.S. And so during El Niños, we typically end up with wetter to the south and drier to the north. So drier towards Washington, southern Canada, Montana. And then if we're in that's in an El Niño. La Niña, you just flip everything around and you can get quite a bit wetter into the Pacific Northwest. And then into the higher terrain in western Montana.
Oh, okay. So what are we in right now?
We are solidly in an El Nino. Okay. We have been for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
Likely to be for a couple of months coming up.
Okay. And, you know, we in the eastern part of Montana, we've had some pretty bad drought conditions over the last few years. And also kind of up in the northwest of Montana, you know, seems like last year we had a lot of snow come in, some pretty good snowpack buildup. But the weird thing was when it was all said and done, and, you know, we were looking at the maps of the snowpack maps and stuff and seeing, oh, yeah, we're, you know, 180% or not 180, but I think the highest one was around 160 and others. But then I noticed up where, you know, we have ski areas and all this stuff, it was only like 70%. In fact, one of the largest lakes in Montana didn't stay full all the way for the summer. Are we going to see that with now being so solidly in this El Nino? Are we going to see drought conditions increase then in some of these areas? And if so, where?
Yeah, so you are likely to see drought conditions kind of deepen, intensify, and even expand a little bit from where they are right now. Looking at the latest U.S. drought monitor, there are what's called moderate drought conditions, really in the high terrain, and even a bit of severe drought conditions in far northwest Montana. And we are looking at, you know, you combine that with our predictions that we're likely to stay on the drier side compared to normal, and you are likely to develop more of a drought, especially through the end of March, all in western Montana, anywhere kind of west of the continental divide, really likely to see that. And even drought development down towards Yellowstone and toward down, you know, past Bozeman, down that region there, likely to see some drought developing and pushing down that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, not the greatest news we wanted to hear, but it's an important news to hear. Now, Matthew, we're going to take a quick break here from one of our great sponsors. But when we come back, I want to talk a bit about snowpack and what you've seen as far as snowpack around the state and so far, and how that might differ, say, from what the normal snowpack would be. And then we're going to, after that, we'll get into really how you guys build these long-term forecasts and that. So we'll do that right after this.
The other day, I was out doing a little shopping and saw a fellow pull up in his side-by-side ATV, and it had a Boss snowplow mounted on the front of it. I just had to stop and tell him how amazed I was to see the perfect-sized Boss snowplow mounted on that like it absolutely belonged there. I said I had no idea that Boss made a snowplow that fit so perfectly on an ATV. He said, yeah, me neither, but I went into Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer in Missoula, Montana, and told them I really needed something that could help me use my side-by-side to plow smaller driveways and sidewalks. And I'll be darned if they didn't have the perfect thing. It does an amazing job and has given my snowplowing business the perfect tool. The folks at Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer mounted it on my side-by-side and showed me how to make that thing work like nothing I'd ever seen. Well, folks, that's Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer for you. They always know how to help anyone get the job done. Whether it's the perfect Boss snowplow that obviously fits on any kind of rig, to the best dump trailers and truck beds. Folks, I just can't think of a better place to send you to. They have a full service department and can even help you get financing so you can get what you need right away. I hope you're having a great and safe winter out there, and if you're not, remember Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer, because chances are they have just what you need to make this winter the best you've ever had. Go see them at 5680 Expressway in Missoula, Montana, or on the web at rmtte.com. That's Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer, rmtte.com. Go see them and have the best winter ever. And we are back here on the Montana Outdoor Podcast. I'm with Matthew Rosenkranz. He is with the National Weather Service and is in the weather predicting side of it, I guess you could say, in layman's terms, and giving us a lot of great information. Thank you again, Matthew. So let's talk a bit about snowpack. What are you seeing for snowpack right now? Do you guys get that kind of data where you're at?
Yeah, so we have great partnerships with the USGS and with the USDA, and they do snowpack monitoring, and some local universities also help out with it. So it really does kind of take the whole effort, and it kind of, you know, takes the whole group of people, scientists that are looking at this from individual towns, and then the agency is pulling it all together.
Okay.
So I'm looking at right now the map from the USDA. They kind of put it together for us. And it's showing about 58% of normal for snow depth up in the Penned Oriole basin. And then I'm seeing things like in the Milk Basin, the 25% of normal. So it's quite a bit low compared to normal when you get to start out of the high terrain and get a little bit further east. Most of the basins, Missouri headwaters, they're at about 50%. The Upper Yellowstone's at 53%. So you've got some that are in the mid-50s, and you got some that are down in the 30s. This is a little better than it was even when I looked at this data a couple of days ago.
Really? Yikes.
Yeah, so it had a little bit. So it was even worse, right? It
okay.
was. And then we talked about the drought before.
Right.
I was looking back at that. A year ago, you had 11% of the state was in extreme to exceptional drought. Right now, we don't have any of the state in extreme drought. It's all in the moderate drought or lessness. So there was that, there was a good bit of higher terrain snowpack and some kind of some wetness, but a couple of months ago, but then December really dried out quick.
Okay. Now what do you see as far as, going forward? I mean, is when we get that low, is there a way to catch up, do you think? And would that be possible fitting that into your current forecast model, do you think?
So when I look at my crystal ball,
yes,
which not actually how we do it.
I know.
That might actually be easier than what we do. Catching up during a robust El Nino year is going to be very difficult. Most El Nino years, I mean, it's not given that every El Nino year is dry, but when you look at the last 70 years of data, most times during El Nino, you are dry in the Pacific Northwest. You are wetter in California. That signature is quite robust in the data set.
Mm-hmm.
So catching up this year, probably not likely. You might get something late May, June, as you kind of do get that moisture, you know, how it does get kind of wetter the springtime as it kind of comes up from the south. You may get a little bit of that, but it's a long time off.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got to do a lot of rain dances and stuff and snow dances as we go along.
I'll leave that to you. You don't want to see me dance.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been asked not to dance many a time.
So let's talk a bit about the forecast side of it and how you do it, because, okay, you know, you mentioned the crystal ball, and obviously you don't use that, but you do use a lot of data. So talk about that as far as, you know, and we're going to have you talk a bit about, you know, going further out, but just talk about how you build these forecasts and that, because to me that just fascinates me that you guys can forecast that far out. And so how does all that work?
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of fascinated by it. I went to school for this stuff and even had some professors that were like, oh, you can't do that. Don't even think about that. 20 years later, science goes and here we're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and little did I know, you know, they were actually starting that and doing that back then within the National Weather Service. They started back doing these officially in the current format in 1995. So it'll be going on a good 30 years of these. Well, what we do is we look at models which take the current state and the current measurement of what are the temperatures and the winds and the latest humidity. What are they right now? And then we plug them in to the equations that tell us how air moves and how water condenses and, you know, the angle of the sun based on the day and of the year, because that changes throughout the year. Snowpack that's already on the ground, right? We have measured, and that all goes into the model. It's about 10 million data points every 6 hours.
Okay.
And then we say, okay, given those, what we have now, play that forward if you have the equations of the physical equation, how the world works, just the physics of it. What would you get? We do that with a couple of hundred models. We also take into account what are trends. What have we been seeing the last 5, 10 years? What's different this year than 5 or 10 years ago? We also take into account the latest data set of El Niño and make sure that those numerical models that take those 10 million data points, are they really seeing El Niño right now and seeing its impacts? And we'll make sure that if those models don't see it as strongly as it is, we'll move it towards the strength. Or if the models think it's too strong, then our current observations will move it away from that a little bit. And then we combine those all through both humans looking at the data and with statistical approaches, which one is more accurate over the last 10 years, it gets a little bit more weight. And we track that every single month and we update that little weighting kind of jiggles every month, which should have been the most accurate. And we just keep going with those and keep updating that every single time we do these.
Wow. So this, like you were saying earlier, this is involving a lot of different people, a lot of different agencies. Now, so everyone's amassing all this data, and then it comes into you. Now, you guys, you're over on the East Coast, right?
Yes, we are. We are based out of College Park, Maryland.
Okay. So this data is all flowing in to Maryland, and then does each kind of person within the main area there, do they kind of gather the data they need to assemble what they do? For example, with you in doing these forecasts and that, then are you pulling all this in and doing it? And do you have interaction back and forth with all these scientists around the country, or is the computer kind of amassing all that for you?
So both. The computers do a large bit of the amassing. We have scientists on the team within the Climate Prediction Center that we get together a week before we release the outlooks, and we're looking at the data, making sure it's all good, making sure there's nothing that came in. You know, maybe when someone launched a weather balloon to do a measurement, you can kind of tell if that balloon all of a sudden got hung up on a tree and gave you some real bad data. We're looking at across the globe, make sure everything is coming in and it passes the initial, you know, the smell test, right? It's got to pass that's the test. And that's really well honed with us because this is what we do 40 hours a week. And then so we'll actually make a draft set of the outlooks. We talk to each other, making sure we're all getting the inputs. I talk to people that are stratosphere experts. I'm talking to people at NASA. I'm talking to people at University of Colorado Boulder, sometimes University of Montana. People come in, Oregon. So we're getting a lot of different inputs. And then we make those out, a first draft of the outlooks. And then we actually go through and have a large conference call that is actually recorded as well let me put it out there, where we have anywhere about 60 to 70 people that are either state level professors, state climatologists, looking at it and going, hey, I think you missed something a little bit here, missed something a little bit there. And we can adjust the forecast based on their local knowledge.
Okay.
And sometimes they'll say something I know that that's already been accounted for. We already noticed the same thing. So I'll let them know that. So we really get together with a large group of the experts, and you know, some people will come in and be like, hey, all those snow measurements, maybe coming out of the mountains in California, you know, they're all delayed a little bit, so you might not actually have them yet. And we're like, oh, good to know. I'll have to account for that. Mm-hmm. So we get really good inputs like that.
Wow. See, I had no idea that there's that much that goes into this. But then again, if you want to be accurate, you got to pull it all in. So speaking of accuracy, we're going to take another quick break. But when we come back, let's talk a bit about accuracy of these long-term forecasts and how accurate are they. So I'll talk to you about that when we come back from this break. Are any of you out there having trouble deciding what the perfect floor for your home should be? Why not let Superior Hardwoods of Montana guide you through the woods? At Superior Hardwoods of Montana, their mission is to provide you with the knowledge to make the best choice for you. Thinking bamboo? My friends at Superior Hardwoods say, leave it in the zoo feeding the pandas. Superior Hardwoods is a plastic, stone, and grass-free zone. They are the home of true, solid hardwood flooring options. It doesn't matter what your contractor, your best friend, or your mom would put in their house. Your floor is your choice. Come and browse their vast stock of flooring. Yeah, that is where that saying comes from. Let them guide you through the woods. And they really do just that. With a huge selection of woods to choose from and true pros in wood products with you, it will not take long for them to help you zero in on just what you were looking for, even if you weren't even sure what that was when you walked in their door. Their specialty is transforming those confused, frustrated, and about to give up kind of folks into happy, well-informed customers. Go see them, Superior Hardwoods of Montana, on the web at superior-hardwoods.com or stop in and see them at 5120 Highway 93 South, just south of Missoula. Superior Hardwoods of Montana, that's superior-hardwoods.com. And we are back here on the Montana Outdoor Podcast. I'm talking with Matt Rosenkranz. He's with the National Weather Service. And we're talking about predictions and all the different things that what goes into it. Mainly just talking about Montana's weather. I know that's been a big concern of many of you that listen to this podcast on a regular basis. And though Matt has not delivered exactly what we wanted to hear, he is delivering us the information. So, Matt, let's talk about accuracy. You told us about how these long-term forecasts get built and all the different people that get into it. How accurate are they?
So when I look at those temperature outlooks and precipitation outlooks that I mentioned before, go back to 1995, I can look at them and we run a skill score on them, which we put on our website. And then I'll translate that skill score into a hit percentage. How often do we hit? How often is it a yes? A hit is a yes. We forecasted it and it happened. Or there's a no. You know, we forecasted it didn't happen. We didn't forecast it and it happened. Right? Those are all your no cases.
Okay.
When I'm looking at it, when I look at the long-term scores, they get about 55% of the forecasts are correct.
Wow.
And that's, yeah. And when you look at what you would expect, you would only expect about 33% of them to be correct because our forecasts are below normal, above normal, and near normal.
I would have thought it had been lower. No offense, but I really would have thought it would have been lower. But that's actually very impressive. Yeah. Now, has that gotten better? How has that changed, say, over the last 50-100 years? I mean, has it gotten? I assume your accuracy keeps going up. I suppose with technology, huh?
Yeah, so we have I've been doing these outlooks since 95. The temperature outlooks, they have gone up a little bit. They kind of started around, and what I would look in the score, in the skill scores, and see, you know, accuracy at about 40%, and now we're up at about 55%. Mm-hmm. And then the precipitation has, that's gone up in skill as well. It's not everywhere that's gone up in skill. We've had better skill in the Northwest, better skill in the Southeast U.S. Southwest U.S., not as much increase in the skill. But when you get up into Montana, we do see a good bit of skill in the winter for precipitation and temperature. I'll tell you, in the springtime, it's not as good. Springtime forecasts of the temperatures haven't been as good in the past couple of years. And we've had back-to-back La Niñas. We had three of them in a row. It's only happened one ever time in the past 70 years.
Really?
Yeah, so it's kind of a rare case for some of these setups. So wish we can get all the cases. Wish we can get them all right every time.
Yeah.
But you know, who said it? Yogi Berra, predicting the future is hard.
Yeah.
Predicting hard, especially about the future.
So, who ends up being responsible for this? I mean, do you guys all sit around at the end of the year and, you know, rib each other? Hey, Rosencrantz, you really blew that spring forecast or whatever. I mean, or is it always kind of grouped into a big group effort, so no one really gets the worst of the ribbing?
No, I mean, maybe internal to the team, there's a little, but other than that, really, because when you're not on the team, when you're not doing the forecast,
yeah,
the kind of the lead in December, when you're not, you're in a support role. So, okay. You know, it's like a basketball team, right? You either all win the championship or you're all don't win the championship.
Well, you know, I know that we as a, you know, the folks just out doing our thing, we blame the weatherman all the time, you know, when we're out there and it's, we're bundled up and we're, you know, now we're sweating because it's way, way warmer than what you said. Well, boy, those weather guys, they really blew it this time. And so you get blamed a lot. I mean, not just for the prediction, but sometimes you're just blamed for the weather in general. I mean,
I just tell people I'm in sales, not production.
That's good. So does that ever wear on you guys? That, I mean, because you probably don't get a lot of pats on the back. Does that wear on you a little bit?
We actually do get some good pats on the back when we forecast, and it helps out, and people make decisions, and it makes their lives a little better.
Yeah.
We'll find out about it. Like everything, though, when it doesn't work out, you find out about it a lot more. Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you just you end up learning to develop a thick skin, mm-hmm. just like being in any business or for a long time, right? You know, not everyone's always happy with you,
right?
Well, but we always do better. Yeah, you know? We really do take the feedback, and you know, people, you know, now if the listeners from your show now end up going to the Climate Prediction Center website and they get something from us, email us and ask us. And we can do a lot. We can do a lot of things to help people get that right information to them.
Well, that's one of the things that I'm going to put in the podcast description. And folks, when you got this podcast or found it, for those of you that are new, there's always a podcast description. In that podcast description, I'm going to put a link to the prediction website. I'm going to put some links into all that. And then can I put in the email for your office if people want to contact and ask you a question?
We do have a public affairs email address.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
So we'll put that one in there for everybody. And so we'll have all that for you. So folks, that way you know, if you do want more information, we appreciate that you can deliver that on to us. Now, let's talk a bit about going further out. Now we're going to stretch your abilities here a little bit, Matthew. So we talked about the forecast for this winter. What does it look like for Montana going through, say, summer into fall? Do you have that?
We do actually make outlooks. So I talked a little bit about a January, February, March outlook.
Right.
We have February, March, April. a March, April, May outlook. So every 3 months, we do that going out for the entire year. And looking through the springtime, through April, May, June, it does look like we still see some of that dryness in the northwest part of the state mostly. And that's really a bit of the April and May signature, because when I started to look at June and July, there's still some dryness, but not as intense. As we go through the summertime.
So we are going to have, or at least it looks like we'll have a little wetter June and July then.
Definitely wetter than the February, March, April timeframe.
Okay.
Both for two reasons, right? Like it's just a wetter time of the year, right? You get your big snows, February, March, you get your season, but then you actually have there's a bit of a lull in the precipitation. And then until you get into your summertime thunderstorms. So it's like I said, that lull there, then you get into some the northern fringes of the monsoon kind of rainfall out west can push up that far. And then we start to see that kind of hang on through, in through August and September. You can get back to some normal conditions there.
Mm-hmm. So what does that look like then going into August and into the fall? What are your forecasts showing there?
We're showing actually like near normal precipitation. So it does look like after this kind of dry period, we could get some recovery. Some of our longer range El Nino forecasts actually do have us transitioning to closer towards La Nina, which would be a kind of a reversal from the pattern we're seeing now. Those kind of forecasts being, 10 months out from now, there's a lot of uncertainty with them.
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah, that's really getting out there. Yeah.
It's really getting out there for a single season or half of a state, something like that.
Right.
It's easier to make a forecast. Okay, what's it going to be for the entire continent of North America? The further you go out, right, you got to get a bigger land area.
Mm-hmm.
You can do kind of that, right? So, but if you're doing a forecast just for tomorrow, one day out, you can do individual cities, individual towns. Right, so that kind of scale and time stuff kind of goes together. That's kind of why we present some of the information the way we do as well.
Oh, okay. Okay. So we might see a little bit more normal stuff. Do you have anything that shows you, and I know now we're getting way, way out. I mean, could, say, next winter be a little better for us, do you think? Can we ever get out of El Nino?
Yes. So you are actually likely to not be an El Nino this year. If you are an El Nino this year, you're likely not to be next year.
Okay.
Whether or not we go full bore into La Nina next year and reverse kind of to what we saw a couple of years ago, or we just stay in the kind of neutral in the middle territory, that's still pretty uncertain. When I, look out as far as I can go, as far as I'm really comfortable looking at it, then we have the good models and the statistics on it. It does look like we're going to be in the neutral territory, not in La Nina territory, as we get into the beginning parts of, later fall, beginning parts of next winter.
Okay.
Well,
that's a little encouraging.
Is
it normal to either be in a La Nina or El Nino, or is it more normal to be kind of just into a in-between type of thing for Montana?
So it's kind of by definition, it's normal to be in all three of them. So the way we define is when you look back in the record, you define the upper, lower, and middle areas by dividing up what has happened into one-thirds. So then when you take for the precipitation, temperature, and impacts in Montana, right? Like if I look, the way we do it is I look back from 1990 to 2020, line them all up and say, what was my coldest years, and my warmest years? And I sort them in those, and there's 10 warmest and 10 coldest. And then there's 10 left in the middle out of those 30 years. And that kind of defines it that way. But with respect to La Nina and El Nino, yes, you are likely to kind of be in one of those two phases. and the ocean does kind of transition through them, it is kind of rare for it to stay in the kind of neutral, like very close to zero for a long time. It's usually you're transitioning through them from one to the other, kind of bouncing back and forth across the Pacific.
Okay. Well, man, you've given us so much information, Matt. I really appreciate all the time you've given us. I wanted to try to slide in one more, maybe a couple more quick questions.
Sure.
Patty sent an email and she says, who names these weather systems? I assume she's speaking of La Nina and El Nino. How did they get their names that you guys use now?
So El Nino is actually named by the fishermen, and I want to say it's Ecuador off the west coast of South America, had been tracked by the fishermen there for hundreds of years.
Oh, okay.
Because they would notice as the ocean conditions changed there, as the warm waters came in or the warm waters receded, a lot of the ocean life likes the cooler water. It's more nutrient rich. So for them, El Nino really disturbed their fishing, their ability to, you know, catch things, and even some village survival. So it was a big event for them. So they've been tracking it for years. And then it was termed El Nino. And then the La Nina just being the other side to it. Once we kind of recognize that there is a kind of, you know, hot side and a cool side, or a plus and a negative side to this.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I always wondered what, who was the ones that, took the credit for that. How about for the naming of the big storms, hurricanes and all that? All of them get a name. Who decides that?
I was going to say joke on who did. But that's actually a list that is the National Hurricane Center provides that up to the World Meteorological Organization, which is part of the UN, right? Mm. The UN has multiple branches that help countries kind of get together and facilitate things. And obviously a hurricane or a major storm can devastate multiple countries. So we kind of get together on that. So we have a list of names. And the National Hurricane Center for the Atlantic, they use a rotating 6-year list of the names. And then if any one storm does a lot of damage or is significant for some reason, that name will be retired and that name is no longer used.
Oh, kind of like getting your jersey retired then if you're in sports. Huh?
It's really for the bad reasons. Right?
Yeah.
You're an infamous player, right?
Right. Yeah. You're the evil storm.
Oh, I wonder, we've never had a storm evil, like a Dr. Evil.
Yeah. Will it be an evil hurricane? Well, Matthew, I want to thank you so much. This has really given us so much information. Now, here's the bad news is I know I'm going to get a ton more questions from people after they listen to this. So you're going to have to come back so we can talk to you some more down the road. We'd really love it. Because this, as I've said so many times to you, this is the outdoors is just such an important part of who we are and what we do. But I also wanted to say thank you to you and everybody, you know, in the National Weather Service for everything that you guys do, because really, you know, I think we all like to, you know, poke fun at you and say, oh yeah, those guys are always guessing and that, but really, I mean, deep down you guys save lives and you help a lot of people understand their climate better and understand how to get things done. So thank you for your service to our country and for what you're doing, because it does mean a lot to all of us out here.
Well, I want to thank you for starting off your show, recognizing your veterans as one. I thank you for the recognition. And our pleasure that's our mission. Save lives, protect property, and enhance the economy.
What branch of service were you in?
So I was a meteorologist for the U.S. Air Force.
Oh, wow. Wow, now that probably put a little pressure on you. So you would have to do a little forecasting for, like, missions of, you know, I imagine there's times they can't fly and stuff. I mean, was that kind of like what you did? Or
that was a large part of what I did. And the best ones were when you made the forecast and then you walked out with the pilots and hopped in the plane and dealt with it when that forecast is right or wrong.
Yeah, I could see that. You get up in the air going, God, I hope I'm right. Oh, I'm hope I'm right.
Yeah, when you're up at 18,000 feet and they've got to yank that stick to the left and then, well, let's say not all those systems in the body lake so much. So you got to deal with it when it comes at you, fast and furious. So
yikes. Well, thank you for your service to our country that way as well. All right. Well, Matt, I'm going to let you go. We are going to absorb all this great information that you've given us, and then hopefully have you back again soon, and we can talk more about it as we get into changing seasons and all that. So thanks again. And for those of you folks out there that have questions, again, get over to your podcast description there that I have and get all your links that I've got down there for you and click away, and you're going to get lots more information. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Montana Outdoor Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Montana Outdoor Podcast. It has been brought to you in part by Superior Hardwoods of Montana, home of the largest selection of in-stock high-end wood products and flooring in the Western United States. Let them guide you through the woods at superior-hardwoods.com. And by Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer in Missoula, home of Boss Snowplows, CM Truck Beds, and Diamond C Trailers. Just go to rmtte.com for more information. So what did you think of today's podcast? Send your questions and comments to downrigger@montanaoutdoor.com. We should be dropping a new podcast this next Saturday. Until then, we will see you soon out in Montana's great outdoors.